Chapter 28. The Raven. The Raven was undoubtedly Edgar Allan Poe's finest and most famous poem, and was his own personal favourite, being the one he most liked to recite at poetry readings. Published in 1845, the poem drew heavily on Elizabeth Barrett's Lady Geraldine's courtship, something he acknowledged in the original dedication, but had conveniently forgotten when explaining how he wrote The Raven in his essay, The Philosophy of Composition, the whole affair tending to make nonsense of Poe's attacks on Longfellow as a plagiarist. A troubled genius, Poe also suffered the inverse cash-fame law. The more famous he became, the less money he had. The Gold Bug, one of his most popular short stories, sold over 300,000 copies, but netted him only $100. With The Raven, he fared even worse. Poe's total earnings for one of the greatest poems in the English language was a paltry $9. Mion de Floss. Who put the Poe in poem? The doorbell rang as I was putting my shoes on, but it wasn't Goliath. It was agents Lamb and Slaughter. I was really quite glad to see that they were still alive. Perhaps Aornis didn't regard them as a threat. I wouldn't. Her name's Aornis Hades, I told them as I hopped up and down, trying to pull my other shoe on. Sister of Acheron, don't even think of tackling her. You know you're close when you stop breathing. Wow, exclaimed Lamb, patting his socks for a pen. Aornis Hades. How did you figure that out? I glimpsed her several times over the past few weeks. You must have a good memory, observed Slaughter. I have help. Lamb found a pen, discovered it didn't work, and borrowed a pencil off his partner. The point broke. I lent him mine. What was her name again? I spelled it out for him and he wrote it down so slowly it was painful. Good, I said once they had finished. What are you guys doing here anyway?
Flanker wants a word.
I'm busy.
You're not busy any more, replied Slaughter, looking very awkward and wringing her hands. I'm sorry about this. But you're under arrest.
What for now?
Possession of an illegal substance.
This was an interesting development. He'd obviously not found the cause of tomorrow's Armageddon and was attempting a little framing to make me compliant. I had thought he would try something of the sort, but now wasn't the time. I had an appointment in the Raven I needed to keep.
Listen, guys, I'm not just busy, I'm really busy. And Flanker sending you along with some bullshit trumped-up charges just wasting your time and mine.
It's not trumped up, said Slaughter, holding out an arrest warrant. It's cheese. Illegal cheese. SO1 found a block of flattened cheese under a Hispano Suiza with your prints all over it. It was part of a cheese seizure Thursday. It should have been consigned to the furnaces.
I groaned. It was just what Flanker wanted, a simple internal charge that usually meant a reprimand but could, if needed, result in a custodial sentence. A solid gold arm twister, in other words. Before the two agents could even draw breath, I had slammed the door in their faces and was heading out the fire escape. I heard them yell at me as I ran out onto the road, just in time to be picked up by Shithouse. It was the first and last time I would ever be pleased to see him. So there I was, unsure if I'd just got out of the frying pan and into the fire, or out of the fire and into the frying pan. I had been frisked for weapons and a wire, and they had taken my automatic, keys, and jurisfiction travel book. Shithouse drove and I was sitting in the back seat, wedged tightly between chalk and cheese. I'm kind of glad to see you, in a funny sort of way. There was no answer, so I waited 10 minutes and then asked, Where are we going? This didn't elicit a response either, so I patted Chalk and Cheese on the knees and said, You guys been on holiday this year? Chalk looked at me for a moment, then looked at Cheese and answered, We went to Mallorca, before he lapsed back into silence. An hour later we arrived at Goliath's research and development facility in Aldermaston. Surrounded by triple fences of razor wire and armed guards patrolling with full-size saber-tooths, the complex was a labyrinth of aluminum-clad windowless buildings and concrete bunkers interspersed with electrical substations and large ventilation ducts. We were waved through the gate and parked in a lay-by next to a large marble Goliath logo, where Chalk, Cheese and Shithouse offered up a short prayer of contrition and unfailing devotion to the corporation.
That done, we were on our way again past thousands of yards of pipework, buildings, parked military vehicles, trucks and all manner of junk.
"Be honoured next," said Shithouse. "Few are blessed with seeing this far into the workings of our beloved corporation."
"I feel more humbled by the second, Mr. Shithouse." We drove onto a low building with a domed concrete roof. This was of an even higher security than the main entrance, and Chalk, Cheese and Shithouse had to have their half Windsor tie knots scanned for verification. The guard on duty opened a heavy blast door that led to a brightly lit corridor, which in turn contained a row of elevators. We descended to lower ground 12, went through another security check, and then along a shiny corridor past doors either side of us that had brass placards screwed to the polished wood, explaining what went on inside. We walked past electronic computing engines, tachyon communications, square peg in a round hole, and stopped at the book project. Shithouse opened the door and we entered. The room was quite like Mycroft's laboratory, apart from the fact that the devices seemed to have been built to a much higher degree of quality and had actually cost some money. Where my uncle's machines were held together with baler twine, cardboard and rubber solution glue, the machines in here had all been crafted from high-quality alloys. All the testing apparatus looked brand new, and there was not an atom of dust anywhere. It was chaos, but refined chaos. There were about a half dozen technicians, all of whom seemed to have a certain pallid disposition as though they spent most of their life indoors, and they looked at us curiously as we walked in. I don't suppose they saw many strange faces. In the middle of the room was a doorway, a little like a walk-through metal detector. It was tightly wrapped with thousands of yards of fine copper wire. The wire ended in a tight bunch, the width of a man's arm, that led away to a large machine that hummed and clicked to itself. As we walked in, a technician pulled a switch. There was a crackle and a puff of smoke, and everything went dead. It was a prose portal. But more relevant to the purposes of this narrative, it didn't work. I pointed to the copper-bound doorway in the middle of the room. It had started to smoke, and the technicians were now trying to put it out with carbon dioxide extinguishers.
"Is that thing meant to be a prose portal?"
"Sadly, yes," admitted Shithouse.
"As you may or may not know, all we managed to synthesize was a form of curdled stodgy gunge from volumes 1 to 8 of The World of Cheese.
Jack Shit said it was cheddar."
"Jack always tended to exaggerate a little, Miss Next. This way."
We walked past a large hydraulic press, which was rigged in an attempt to open one of the books that I had seen at Mrs. Nakajima's apartment. The steel press groaned and strained, but the book remained firmly shut. Further on, a technician was valiantly attempting to burn a hole in another book, with similar poor results. And after that, another technician was looking at an X-ray photograph of the book. He was having a little trouble as 2,000 or 3,000 pages of text and numerous other enclosures all sandwiched together didn't lend themselves to easy examination.
"What do these books do next?"
I was in no mood for a show and tell. I was here to get Landon back, nothing more. "Do you want me to get Jack Shit out or not?" He stared at me for a moment before dropping the subject and walking on past several other experiments, down a short corridor and through a large steel door to another room that contained a table, chair, and Lavoisier. He was reading the copy of the poems of Edgar Allan Poe as we entered. He looked up.
"Monsieur Lavoisier, I understand you already know Miss Next?" asked Shithouse.
"We did some time together," I replied slowly, staring at Lavoisier, who seemed a great deal older and distinctly ill at ease with the situation. I got the impression he didn't like Goliath any more than I did. He didn't say anything. He just nodded his head in greeting, shut the book and rose to his feet. We stood in silence for a moment.
"So go on," said Shithouse finally. "Do your booky stuff and Lavoisier will reactualize your husband as though nothing had happened. No one will ever know he had gone, except you, of course."
I bit my lip. This was one of the biggest chances I was ever likely to take. I would try and capitalize on Lavoisier's apparent dislike of Goliath. After all, the Chronogard had no interest in Landon or Jack Shit, and there was more than one way to trap my father. I was going to have to risk it.
"I need more than just your promise, Shithouse."
"It's not my promise next. It's a Goliath guarantee. Believe me, it's riveted iron."
"So was the Titanic," I replied. In my experience, a Goliath guarantee guarantees nothing. He stared at me and I stared back.
Then what do you want?
He asked.
One, I want Landon reactualized as he was. Two, I want my travel book back and safe conduct from here. Three, I want a signed confession admitting that you employed Lavoisier to eradicate Landon.
I gazed at him steadily, hoping my audacity would strike a positive nerve.
One, agreed. Two, you get the book back afterwards. You used it to vanish in Osaka, and I'm not having that again. Three, I can't do.
Why not? I asked. Bring Landon back and the confession is irrelevant, because it never happened. But I can use it if you ever try anything like this again.
Perhaps, put in Lavoisier, you would accept this as a token of my intent.
He handed me a brown hardback envelope. I opened it and pulled out a picture of Landon and me at our wedding.
I have nothing to gain from your husband's eradication and everything to lose, Miss Next. Your father, well, I get to him eventually. But you have the word of a commander in the Corner Guard, if that's good enough.
I looked at Lavoisier, then at Shithouse, then at the photo. It was the one that used to sit on the mantelpiece at my mother's house. Where did you get this?
In another time, another place, replied Lavoisier. And at considerable personal risk to myself, I assure you. Landon is nothing to us, Miss Next. I am only here to help Goliath. Once done, I can leave them to their nefarious activities, and not before time.
Shithouse shuffled slightly and glared at Lavoisier. It was clear they mistrusted each other deeply. It could only work to my advantage.
Then let's do it, I said finally. But I need a sheet of paper.
Why?
Asked Shithouse.
Because I have to write a detailed description of this charming dungeon to be able to get back, that's why.
Shithouse nodded to Chalk, who gave me a pen and paper. And I sat down and wrote the most detailed description that I could. The travel book said that 500 words was adequate for a solo jump, 1,000 words if you were to bring anyone with you. So I wrote 1,500 just in case.
Shithouse looked over my shoulder as I wrote, checking I wasn't writing another destination.
I'll take that back next,
said Shithouse, retrieving the pen as soon as I had finished.
Not that I don't trust you or anything.
I took a deep breath, opened the copy of the Poems of Edgar Allan Poe, and read the first verse to myself. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary, or a plan to venge myself upon that cursed Thursday next, this air affair, so surprising, gives my soul such loath despising. Here I plot my temper rising, rising from my jail of text. Get me out, I said, advising, pluck me from this jail of text, or I swear I'll wring your neck. He was still pissed off, make no mistake about that. I read on. Ah, distinctly I remember it was my bleak September, when that loathsome Spec-Ops member tricked me through the Raven's door. Eagerly I wished the morrow would release me from this sorrow, then a weapon I will borrow, sorrow her turn to explore. I declare that obnoxious maiden who is little but a whore, darkness hers for evermore.
Still the same old jack shit, I murmured.
I won't let him lay a finger on you, Miss Next, assured Shithouse. He'll be arrested before you can say ketchup.
So gathering my thoughts, I offered my apologies to Miss Havisham for being an impetuous student, cleared my mind and throat, and then read the words out loud, large as life and clear as a bell. There was a distant rumble of thunder and the flutter of wings close to my face. An inky blackness fell and a wind sprang up and whistled about me, tugging at my clothes and flicking my hair into my eyes. A flash of lightning briefly illuminated the sky about me, and I realized with a start that I was high above the ground, hemmed in by clouds filled with the ugly passion of a tempest in full spate. The rain struck my face with a sudden ferocity, and I saw in the feeble moonlight that I was being swept along close to a large storm cloud, illuminated from within by bolts of lightning. Just when I thought that perhaps I had made a very big mistake by attempting this feat without proper instruction, I noticed a small dot of yellow light through the swirling rain.
I watched as the dot grew bigger until it wasn't a dot, but an oblong. And presently this oblong became a window, with frames, and glass and curtains beyond. I flew closer and faster, and just when I thought I must collide with the rain-splashed glass, I was inside, wet to the skin and quite breathless. The mantel clock struck midnight in a slow and steady rhythm as I gathered my thoughts and looked around. The furniture was of highly polished dark oak, the drapes a gloomy shade of purple, and the wall coverings, where not obscured by bookshelves or morbid mezzo tints, were a dismal brown colour. For light there was a solitary oil lamp that flickered and smoked from a poorly trimmed wick. The room was in a mess. The bust of Pallas lay shattered on the floor, and the books that had once graced the shelves were now scattered about the room with their spines broken and pages torn. Worse still, some books had been used to rekindle the fire. A choked profusion of blackened paper had fallen from the grate and now covered the hearth. But to all of this I paid only the merest attention. Before me was the poor narrator of The Raven himself, a young man in his mid-twenties seated in a large armchair, bound and gagged. He looked at me imploringly and mumbled something behind the gag as he struggled with his bonds. As I removed the gag, the young man burst forth in speech as though his life depended upon it. "'Tis some visitor!" he said urgently and rapidly. "'Tapping at my chamber door! Only this and nothing more!" And so saying, he disappeared from view into the room next door. "'Damn you, Sebastian!' said a chillingly familiar voice from the adjoining room. "'I would pin you to your chair if this poetical coffin had seen so fit as to furnish me with hammer and nails!' But the speaker stopped abruptly as he entered the room and saw me. Jack's shit was in a wretched condition. His previously neat crew-cut had been replaced by straggly hair, and his thin features were now covered with a scruffy beard. His eyes were wide and haunted and hung with dark circles from lack of sleep. His sharp suit was rumpled and torn, his diamond tie-pin lacking in luster. His arrogant and confident manner had given way to a lonely desperation, and as his eyes met mine, I saw tears spring up and his lips tremble. It was, to a committed shit-hater like myself, a joyous spectacle. "Thursday!" he croaked in a strangled cry. "Take me back! Don't let me stay one more second in this vile place! The endless clock striking midnight! The tap-tapping-tapping! The raven! Oh, my good God, the raven!" He fell to his knees and sobbed as the young man bounded happily back into the room and started to tidy up as he muttered, "'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. I'd be more than happy to leave you here, Mr. Shit, but I've cut a deal. Come on, we're going home.' I grasped the Goliath agent by the lapel and started to read the description of the vault back at Goliath R&D. I felt a tug on my body and another rush of wind. The tapping increased, and I just had time to hear the students say, "'Sir or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore,' when we found ourselves back in the Goliath lab at Aldermaston. I was pleased with this, as I hadn't thought it would be that easy. But all my feelings of self-satisfaction vanished when, instead of being arrested, Jack was hugged warmly by his half-brother. "'Jack!' said Shithouse happily. "'Welcome back!' "'Thank you, Brick. How's Mum?' "'She has to have her hip done.' "'Again?' "'Wait a minute,' I interrupted. "'How about your part of the deal?' The two shits stopped chattering for a moment. "'All in good time, Miss Next,' murmured Shithouse with an unpleasant grin. "'We need you to do one or two other small jobs before your husband is reactualized.' "'The hell I will,' I said angrily, taking a step forward as Chalk put a massive hand on my shoulder. "'What happened to the riveted iron Goliath guarantee?' "'Goliath don't do promises,' replied Shithouse slowly as Jack stood blinking stupidly. "'The profit margin is too low. I want you to remain our guest for a while. A woman with your talents is far too useful to lose. You may actually quite like it here.' "'Lavoisier!' I yelled, turning to the Frenchman. "'You promised! The word of a commander in the Chronogard!' He stared at me coldly. "'After what you did to me,' he said tersely, "'this is the most glorious revenge possible. I hope you rot in hell.' "'What did I ever do to you?' "'Oh, nothing yet,' he he replied, readying himself to leave.
But you will.
I stared at him coldly. I didn't know what I was going to do to him, but I hoped it was painful.
Yes,
I replied in a quieter voice. You can count on it. He walked from the room without looking back.
Thank you, monsieur,
shouted Shithouse after him. The wedding picture was a touch of genius. I leaped forward to grab Shithouse but was pinned down by Chalk and Cheese. I struggled long, hard, and hopelessly. My shoulders sagged and I stared at the ground. Landon had been right. I should have walked away.
I want to wring her ghost upon the floor,
said Jack Shit, staring in my direction.
To still this beating of my heart, Mr. Cheese, your weapon.
No, Jack, said Shithouse. Miss Next and her unique attributes could open up a large and highly profitable market to exploit. Shit rounded on his half-brother.
Do you have any idea of the fantastic terrors I've just been through? Trapping me in the Raven is something Next is not going to live to regret. No, Brick, the book slut will surcease my sorrow.
Shithouse held Jack by the shoulders and shook him.
Snap out of that Raven talk, Jack. You're home now. Listen, the book slut is potentially worth billions.
Shit stopped and gathered his thoughts.
Of course,
he murmured finally.
A vast untapped resource of consumers. How much useless rubbish do you think we can offload on those ignorant masses in 19th century literature?
Indeed, replied Shithouse. And our unrepossessed waste, finally, an effective disposal location. Untold riches await the corporation, and listen, if it doesn't work out, then you can kill her.
When do we start?
Asked Shit, who seemed to be growing stronger by the second in the life-giving warmth of corporate avarice.
It depends, said Shithouse, looking at me. On Miss Next.
I'd sooner die, I told them. I meant it, too.
Oh, said Shithouse. Hadn't you heard? As far as the outside world is concerned, you're dead already. Did you think you could see all that was going on here and live to tell the tale?
I tried to think of some sort of way to escape, but there was nothing to hand. No weapon, no book, nothing.
I really haven't decided, continued Shithouse in a patronizing tone, whether you fell down a lift shaft or blundered into some machinery. Do you have any preferences?
And he laughed a short and very cruel laugh. I said nothing. There didn't seem to be anything I could say.
I'm afraid, my girl, said Shithouse as they started to file out the vault door, taking my travel book with them, that you are a guest of the corporation for the rest of your natural life. But it won't all be bad. We will be willing to reactualize your husband. You won't actually meet him again, of course, but he will be alive, so long as you cooperate. And you will, you know.
I glared at the two shits. I will never help you as long as I have breath in my lungs. Shithouse's eyelid twitched.
Oh, you'll help us next. If not for Landon, then for your child.
Yes, we know about that.
We'll leave you for now, and you needn't bother looking for any books in here to pull your vanishing trick. We made quite sure there were none.
He smiled again and stepped out of the vault. The door slammed shut with a reverberating boom that shook me to the core. I sat down on one of the chairs, put my head in my hands, and cried tears of frustration, anger, and loss.